I always remember this as happening exactly after my 8th wedding anniversary. I was working nights at the time, so me and my husband ended up having the whole night to ourselves. Needless to say, I was in something of a chipper mood by the time I got to work. It was around 3:30 in the morning and I was sitting in my pod telling my coworkers how my husband had gotten me a spa day. The last thing I hear before the phone rings is one of them say, "Bring back some face masks so we can pamper ourselves in the dispatch center." The thought of us doing our jobs with mud masks on made me laugh out loud, and I had to calm myself a little before picking up the call. That's the thing about working dispatch. Your shift goes from 1 to 100 with some calls. You're just sitting there, minding your own business, and the emergency just comes to you. And Jesus Christ, was this one an emergency? I open with the usual, 911, what is your emergency? And I hear a soft, whispered female voice, couldn't have been any older than a teenager, say, "I can't do this anymore. Please help me." Right when I ask where she's at, I hear a male voice shouting, and then a banging sound as if someone is trying to break into the room this girl is in. I dispatch a nearby unit of cops as quickly as I can, telling them it's a potential domestic violence situation. In a way, it was a potential domestic, but in others, it was much, much worse. This girl was 13 years old, not much older than my son is now, and she had a gun to her head. It was her father on the other side of the door, and he was indeed trying his darndest to break it down. But it wasn't to hurt her. It was to stop his daughter from shooting herself. I joined him, pleading with the girl in as calm and calculated a way as possible to put the gun down. But all she did was say it again, "I can't do this anymore," before she pulled the trigger. I'll never forget the bang, or the screaming on the line as her father finally broke the door in, and the sound of him screaming how sorry he was. That shrill, empty, hollow shrieking. It'll forever be burned into my memory. It was probably one of the single worst moments of my entire life, but still, I had to keep it together and keep working. "Pick up the phone, sir. Please pick it up," I kept saying. "I need to walk you through CPR, sir. Please pick up the phone. Deputies are coming. Paramedics are coming. Please pick up the phone." No one picked up the phone. I don't think he could hear me over his own screams. I stayed on the open line, calling out to someone to pick up, but there was a weird noise before the screaming sounded further away, almost like the phone had been tossed to one side. As the paramedics and deputies finally arrived on the scene, they called it. There wasn't a surgeon in the world that could have saved that girl's life. The contents of her skull were spread all over her bedroom wall. Signal 7. That was her name now. Death investigation. As I disconnected the call, I remember my upcoming spa just popping into my head. Like a weird, "now where was I" moment. I guess that's just how we compartmentalize things. It occurred to me that that little girl would never have a spa trip anniversary present from her husband. And how tragic that was. A dumb, self-centered thought, I know, but it was just how my mind opted to process the horror of what I'd just been exposed to. I didn't cry until I drove home. A full hour's drive of just non-stop, ugly sobbing. Pulling into my driveway, I wiped my face, went into my kids' room and hugged them. They started crying too, confused and frightened as to why I was so upset. I guess that wasn't quite the right call, but I just couldn't help it. It was just something I needed to do. A good number of years have passed since I got that call, and it definitely wasn't the last time that I had to deal with something like that. Trouble is, they never get any easier. You just learn to deal with the fallout better, to just keep on going and keep answering those calls. Dispatch is a crazy job, to say the very least. One call, you're talking to a toddler who's just had a nightmare, but doesn't want to wake up his mom or dad. The next minute, you're listening to someone taking their last breath. I even got a call from someone reporting Taco Bell for getting their order wrong. Dispatchers get threats, they get screamed at, they get called every curse word ever conceived. But we keep going. We keep answering those calls. We lose coworkers that take their own lives every single year. The stress of the job is extremely high and there's very little in the way of closure for those that need it. Dispatchers carry a heavy burden, long after the call has ended. This happened during my final year of EMS dispatch, and honestly, it's one of the calls that started me off thinking about quitting. I get a call from a frantic woman who said that she'd walked into her apartment to find her roommate hanging from a hook over a doorframe. She'd been holding the girl's legs up to loosen the noose while she called 911, but she didn't have the strength to hold her up much longer and had no idea what to do other than call 911. I ask where exactly in the apartment she is, and she says the doorframe between the kitchen and the hallway. I ask if it would be possible to gently lower her friend, run into the kitchen and grab a knife to cut them down. She says she thinks so. I counter into it, like, "Okay, ma'am, we're gonna grab a knife in 3, 2, 1, go." I hear her grunt a little as she lowers the body, then cutlery jingling together as she grabs a knife, and finally, the thud of her roommate's body hitting the floor as she succeeded in cutting the rope. Okay, I cut her down," she says after grabbing the phone again. I tell her the EMTs are on their way, but then I finally get to asking her how long her friend had been hanging. She tells me she has no idea, that she's been working all day. I tell her to begin CPR if she knows it, which she does, and after a few cycles of chest compressions and mouth to mouth, she picks up the phone again and says, "I don't think it's working." I tell her to keep going and that it's essential to keep trying. That's when the lady hits me with, "But she's cold. She's so cold." I had to take a minute to compose myself. Those words hit me like a ton of bricks for some reason. I dealt with worse calls than that. Straight up triple murders, assaults, all that, but hearing this girl tell me how cold her friend was just tore me up. Just over a year later, I retired. I don't regret my career in dispatch, and I know I made a difference out there, but there's only so much one person can take, and it was that call among a handful of others that just pushed me over the edge. I'm a former chief of police in Glenlyn, Florida. A call began like this, like any other. 911, what's your emergency? A woman is screaming frantically, saying, "An alligator ate part of my baby." My dispatchers tried their best to get some straight answers out of her, but even when she stopped screaming down the phone, all she'll say is, "We were just walking along the sidewalk and out of nowhere, an alligator jumped out of the water and ate part of my baby." Living in Florida, this was entirely possible, and we'd had all prepared for the worst possible outcome. Police arrived on scene, then the fire department, and an ambulance not far away. The fire department medic was the first to arrive, but he radios in that the other units should abort. Of course, the first thought was the child was dead and no EMTs would be needed. And a few minutes later, the medic said animal control was needed. I'm thinking, Jesus Christ, this poor woman, what a terrible thing to happen. Then out of nowhere, I hear something over the radio like, "Is that a leash?" There was a leash hanging out of the alligator's mouth. The baby the woman had been referring to wasn't a human baby at all. It was her freaking dog. It's something we laugh about now, but after all the horror and fear over this fictional poor kid's life, we were straight up angry when we found out. It didn't help that the woman complained that no one would take her to the hospital or take what was left of her dog. There wasn't much to the vet. All I can say is, thank God no humans were injured. Believe me, I do feel bad for the dog, sure, and the lady, but let your dog run off wild near the rivers or lakes in the Sunshine State? You didn't bring your dog for a walk. You brought it as an appetizer. As a dispatcher, I had a call come in from a woman who was screaming that someone in the house was being stabbed. We knew it was serious as screams could be heard in the background as well as a man yelling and cursing. Dispatch was quickly able to determine the location and had cars en route. The dispatcher attempted to keep the caller on the line, but the attacker wasn't done. He found her on the phone and began stabbing her as she's screaming into the telephone, "Help, he's killing me," before she dropped the phone. He could be heard in the background yelling at his victim as he went about his continued gruesome attack. The accused in the matter was served with a restraining order that very day. He returned to the home and was banned from entering and went on a killing spree. Two other relatives in the house were also stabbed before he killed his ex-girlfriend and stabbed himself. His stab wounds were described as being superficial and non-life-threatening. The officers could be heard arriving at the scene just a minute or two after they were dispatched, but it was too late for this domestic violence victim. A recording of the call is used in both our training of new dispatchers and also new officers. The blood-curdling screams and pleading of this young woman on the phone leave an indelible impression on everyone who hears it. The only silver lining is that the murderer will die in prison. Around 25 years ago, it was a typical serene Sunday morning in the upstate New York Sheriff's Office 911 center I worked in. But when I say New York, I mean way upstate. Think the Adirondack Mountains, streams, beautiful lakes, and people from Long Island in their summer homes. The most serious calls we ever took tended to be accidents on the interstate highway that ran the length of the country, or domestic disputes that never involved an arrest. May I remind you that this was a long time ago, and house fires. You get the idea. Sunday shift, picture the serene, newspapers out on the consoles, Dunkin' Donuts still gave free donuts and coffee to road patrol deputies, and us underpaid, forgotten, and normally overworked dispatchers. 911 rang, and I was so bored that I actually jumped on it, thinking it's probably a parking complaint about a church from a frequent flyer with nothing else to do. Nope. Open line in the actual freaking middle of butt-kiss nowhere. A minimum of 20 minutes response time for any unit, police, fire, or EMS. Instantly you know it's going to be a tough call. I heard an adult female in the background say, "Oh my God," before adding something about burning. She then picked up the phone and adds a desperate "help" before it sounded an awful lot like she dropped the phone again. Next thing I heard was a door of some description slamming, then about 30 seconds later a distant bang, like a firework or maybe a propane canister exploding. Well, I dispatch all three types of emergency units as per policy with unconfirmed type of emergencies, but I was 100% sure the house was on fire because of the burning comment. Then I heard, "Please help me," again, only very softly. Positive that the house was burning, I tried in vain to get a response and kept asking if she was alone, get out, etc. All the while updating and expediting units on the radio. First volunteer fire chief arrived and reported no fire. So instantly I'm like, what's going on here? But the fire chief ran around the house checking for smoke, but instead he found a man in the backyard, motionless and holding a gun. This is the day I found out that a 12-gauge shotgun fired point-blank into the chest of a 30-year-old woman holding a phone sounds almost identical to the sound a screen door makes when it slams. I listened to the poor woman's last words as she died alone on her kitchen floor, and I also somehow managed to send a firefighter directly into a life-threatening situation. There's no academy course that exists that can teach you how to deal with stuff like that. Took me a long time to stop equating a slamming screen door with gunfire. Try explaining that to your family and friends when one of them lets the screen door close a little too hard on Labor Day weekend. Anyway, the firefighter turned tail and ran, and the guy turned the gun on himself instead. But didn't get it quite right and survived initially. The number of resources spent trying to save him before his inevitable death was ridiculous. But because I was also a volunteer EMT, I understood it. The medics on scene even got med flights to transfer him to a trauma center, but they couldn't save him. So I guess karma, worked well that day. As a dispatcher, I get some pretty wild calls. And I remember I got a call from a woman who said her husband and son had gotten into a fight that had gotten totally out of hand. Sadly to say, that kind of thing is way more common than you'd think, to the point where I'd even call it a run-of-the-mill domestic situation. In those types of situations, we're trained to send a minimum of 2 units, one to break up the fight, and another to gather up all the necessary statements. While they're on their way, I ask the woman what her husband and son are fighting over, whether this is regular behavior for them, and the whole time I can still hear them screaming and shouting in the background. Occasionally a door will slam, the voices get louder, and the woman begs them to stop and the cycle just keeps going on. She told me that they would argue regularly, but she'd never felt the need to call 911 before. This time was different, she said, and I could hear the terror in her voice that confirmed this is true for me. She started to tell me how their son had been staying with them since his divorce the previous year. I ask her how old her son is, and she says, 43. Now I'm instantly taken aback here. I had it in my head that the son was in his teenage years, as this is most commonly when the father-son clashes occur. She actually manages to calm down a little as she tells the story, and I begin to really feel for this family. The son had obviously had some kind of nervous breakdown, leading to depression, and he'd barely even gone outside for the past few weeks. He evidently wasn't dealing very well. Then right as things kind of calm down and the shouting in the background dies down, I just hear the woman blurt out, "Oh my God, he's got a gun," in the middle of a sentence. I keep asking her, "Ma'am, who has the gun? Tell me who has the gun." And she tells me she saw her husband walking down the hall out to where the son was, and she'd seen his .38 revolver glinting in his hand. And herein lies why dispatch can be so traumatic. I know something awful is about to happen. Once some people get going, there's no stopping them, so my priority here is to preserve human life as best I can until the actual marked units arrive on scene. In the calmest, most mechanical voice possible, I tell her to not try and get in the way, but to find cover and stay put. The ideal place being a porcelain bathtub if the family owns one. You have no idea how many lives porcelain tubs have saved over the years. I had one coworker call them bathroom bunkers, and it stuck. When it's clear she understands my instructions, I radio into my police units and tell them to go full code 3, lights, sirens, door kicking mode, while telling my ambulance to stage nearby. This is standard practice to ensure that medical units aren't hurt. If we have an EMT go down at a scene somewhere, God, that's a whole can of worms I don't even want to think about. When I get back to the call, it's almost totally quiet now. I ask the woman what's happening, and she tells me that she too can't hear anything, and that she even thought it might have calmed down once the son had seen his dad's gun. I hear her say, "Do you think I should check on them?" And I'm right in the middle of telling her to stay put when, bang. I hear this horrible scream of no down the phone, and all of a sudden the woman bursts into tears. I know the worst has happened, and all I can do is inform my officers that there have been shots fired at the scene. By this time, they're both on scene and grabbing their long guns from their trunks, and as they approach the house, they can hear both the dad yelling and the son groaning in pain from around the family garage. And they come around to the front of the garage where it was clear both men were, and notice that there's a small keypad, presumably with a code to open it. I get the code from the wife and pass the information to my officers, listening as they plug the code in before the distinct sound of the garage door raising can be heard. I can't even tell you how fast my heart was racing as I heard those doors slowly rising. Any second, I'm expecting to hear a torrent of gunfire exchanged between the shooter and the officers. I was convinced someone was going to die that night, and I'm keyed up to send in another unit of EMTs, but there's nothing, just silence. After what felt like forever, an officer keys up and tells me that they have one guy in custody and one on the gurney. The shooter had just given up as soon as he saw the cops. Somehow the son actually survived, and his dad was arrested for attempted murder. And unbelievably, the argument started because the dad wanted the son to move out. That's all. It was something so small and dumb, but it just escalated and escalated until the father had no problem turning a gun on his own flesh and blood. Back when I worked full-time for the fire department, I used to take the odd shift working the medical side of the 911 dispatch center. Since smartphones have been getting more and more sophisticated, I've heard it's much easier to pin down exact locations. And in the UK, they have this new three-word system that brings EMTs right on top of your position, should you happen to be stranded somewhere with no recognizable landmarks. I'm almost certain a system such as this is about to be implemented in certain states, but back in 2006, when all anyone had was flip phones and whatnot, finding out exactly where an injured party was could prove extremely difficult. From what I understand, these days you can ping a location to within a few feet of where a call is coming from, but back in the early 2000s, the area was ballooned to square miles. South side or north side of a city, maybe a county, but nothing as accurate as the tech today. So, with that little bit of context established, this is by far the worst 911 call I ever received. I got a call from a cell phone, presumably one of the aforementioned flip phones, and it was a younger girl telling me her mom had fallen and wouldn't wake up. Over the course of several questions, I established that not only has the mom apparently fallen down a flight of uncushioned wooden stairs, but that she didn't seem to have any vital signs whatsoever. This could have simply been because her young daughter simply didn't know what she was looking for or had made a mistake when it came to her breathing or her pulse. But the really alarming thing, the little girl couldn't give us an exact address. And as much as I asked her things like, "Do you have any mail around to read the address off of?" nothing seemed to work. She couldn't find anything, she couldn't remember, and she was beginning to panic. And in a situation where every single second counts, we were burning valuable time. What's worse, all she could say about where she lived was that it's a farm. And given that pretty much all of my district was rural farmlands, her description didn't bring us any closer to saving her mom's life. Working through all the standard questioning, I got to asking how long it had been since her mom fell down the stairs. She told me her mom had fallen just after her favorite TV show had started, and doing the math, I figured out that she'd been down for 30 minutes at the very least. We're taught to remain completely professional in those situations. I mean, I had one regional dispatch trainer tell me, "The more robotic you are, the better. The more detached you are, the more lives you'll save." But in that moment, hearing the mom had been out for like a half hour, I felt my heart sinking. It was like an ice block in my chest. It was the toughest time I've ever had trying to keep it together on a call. But as per my training, I just took a deep breath and tried to mechanically work through the problem-solving techniques I'd been taught. I'd asked her the street name, if there were any landmarks, if there was mail in the house, what she could see out of her front door. But the only thing that landed was the landmarks thing. With the girl telling me that her family walked to and from church every Sunday. Walked. So it had to be close, right? Seconds later, my supervisor and law enforcement are scouring a map of our assigned area, marking off every single church within a few miles of working farms. When they'd narrowed it down to a total number of 5 churches that could feasibly be walking distance for a family with small children, we dispatched a unit to each one with specific instructions to go in lights and sirens the whole way. This would give our younger caller a shot at hearing them approaching so we could further coordinate a response. But just keeping in mind that with only 3 fire rescue vehicles, 2 ambulances, and 4 police patrol cars to cover the entire area, tracking down this young girl's location meant we'd be stretching thin the entire time. By trying to save one life, we'd be risking the lives of others. It was a nerve-wracking risk, but one we were willing to take. Thankfully, after hearing some of our frantic calls going out over the radios, a couple of sheriff's deputies and a handful of highway patrol officers volunteered themselves to join the search effort. Bearing in mind that all this had happened, and we were no more than about 15 minutes into the call. I'd never seen or heard of such a large-scale response in our county, not on my watch anyway. I mean, we really did go into overdrive as soon as all the circumstances of the call became evident. I remember the 15-minute mark because this is about the time we learned that the phone she was using was a cordless one, and the family kept the phone at the bottom of the stairs, just feet away from the front door. This obviously meant that she'd be able to walk outside to look for lights and listen for sirens, a major breakthrough in our efforts to locate her. There was some added suspense when it seemed like she might not have been able to open the front door, but I thanked God when I heard her say, "I got it." Then, it was just a matter of waiting, and hoping she'd heard the sirens in time. I know it's a huge cliche to say that minutes seem like hours or whatever, but I'd never really understood that whole time is elastic concept until then. It really did seem like forever before she heard our sirens, but there was no time to celebrate when she did. We were still faced with the task of figuring out which of our emergency vehicles we could hear. Law enforcement thought fast and had me telling each responder to stop and turn off their sirens before one by one we had them turn them back on so we could determine which one was the closest to her. It turned out to be one of the fire rigs, so we sent everybody to their position and then they spread out to cover the general area, all with their sirens on again. Eventually, one of the state troopers pulled into her street and the girl could see him coming. When the rest of the dispatch center heard me saying, "Okay, run to the fire truck, honey. Go wave to the fire truck." There was a bunch of silent celebration as people punched the air or buried their heads in their hands in relief. As the little girl met the fire truck, the driver was able to relay his position to us and they signaled that her job was essentially done. I stayed on the line while EMTs were guided onto the property, and once they'd arrived, it was adios from us, and all we could do was hope that the mom was okay. Well, it was more like pray by that point, as for all we knew, she had been flatlined for just going on about an hour. However, we heard later that by the time the medical guys got there, the mom was actually awake. She was incredibly disoriented as there was clearly something horribly wrong with her, but she was alive at least. They later found out that she had a broken back, an absolutely horrific break too, and one that might take her more than a year to recover from. The young girl was given a little reward from the police department for her bravery in the call, as she kept calm and did everything we told her to do. I can't say it was anything more than a token, something to take the edge off the traumatic event she'd gone through, but what else can you do? I suppose this has something of a happy ending, though. The mother recovered with no brain or nerve damage, but the recovery process in itself sounded almost as bad as the injury. I suppose the reason I'm telling you all this is to serve a reminder for something very, very important. As someone who's worked as an emergency dispatcher, I really can't stress how important it is for parents to teach their kids the following things. 1. Teach them your first and last names. 2. Get them to learn their home phone number off by heart. 3. Teach them how to make a 911 call, and that's all attached to that. 4. Teach them their home address and zip code. This is by far the most important one. I've lost count of the number of times when this information would have literally saved a life, or at least prevented life-changing damage to health or property. So please, you're not just sparing some 911 dispatcher's nerves. You might have been saving your own life, or those of your family members. Turn it into a game somehow. Heck, get creative, turn it into a song. But please, teach your kids their home address and teach them how to ask for police, ambulance, or fire.